WZBU New Holstein Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Stephanie Officer. Today, layoff notices were sent to 639 employees of Voice of America and the U.S. agency that oversees it, effectively shutting down the outlet that has provided news to countries around the world since World War II. They included employees at VOA's Persian Language Service who were suddenly called off administrative leave last week to broadcast reports to Iran following Israel's attack. Three journalists working for the Persian service who took a cigarette break had their badges confiscated and were not allowed back in. More than 100 million Americans have to be on alert as extreme heat blankets the nation this weekend. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson says his cities will have additional resources available, like cooling centers, as temperatures are expected to soar into the 90s Saturday with a heat index of 100 to 105.
Over the next few days, make sure that we check in on our loved ones and our neighbors, especially our seniors and those with health conditions, individuals with disabilities.
This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For 98.3 and 96.5 WISS News, I'm Lisa Hale.
With the heat coming in this weekend, it's sure going to feel like summer, because it is. Here's Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
It's officially the first day of summer and the longest day of the entire year. The solstice means that the Earth's tilt is closest to the sun, so we get to enjoy 15 hours and 22 minutes of sunlight. Sunset won't happen tonight until around 8:40. And of course, the day summer starts varies from year to year because it's based on an astronomical event and how long it takes the Earth to orbit the sun. Speaking of the sun, did you know that the core, scientists say, is 27 million degrees Fahrenheit? I'm just trying to make you feel a little bit better about the 100-degree heat index headed our way this weekend. It's going to be steamy. With scorching sun, don't forget to hydrate and wear sun protection.
A new report by the Wisconsin Policy Forum has found that Wisconsin gets less funding per resident from the federal government than almost any other state. The report, based on 2022 federal tax data, found that Wisconsin ranked 41st in the country for the amount of federal funding received per resident. In total, the state received an average of a little less than $15,000 of federal funding per resident. While Wisconsin ranks towards the bottom of that list, experts are still warning that further federal budget cuts could have significant impacts on our state. One juvenile died, and another juvenile and an adult male were injured in an accident in the Shawnee County town of Seneca Thursday evening. The accident happened on County Highway D. Officials believe speed was to blame. All involved in the accident were from the Seymour area. I'm Lisa Hale for 98.3 and 96.5 WISS News. For news anytime, visit WISS.FM.
The Brewers face the Twins. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball tonight, the Brewers and the Twins at Target Field. The Miz, Jacob Mizorowski, on the mound for Milwaukee against the Twins' Joe Ryan. The Brewers with a win over the first-place Cubs yesterday, 8-7. The wind blowing out at Wrigley. Home runs by Rhys Hoskins, Caleb Durbin, Isaac Collins. Pat Murphy was pleased.
Our guys, you know, they got out to a good lead. Swing the bats great today with authority. A lot of hard contacts and great opportunity for our young guys to then face the great Cubs team.
Boys high school baseball, Muskego with a 5-4 victory over Badger to win the Division I title in the WIAA state tournament at Fox City Stadium. New Berlin Eisenhower 5-4 over Seymour in Division II. Kenosha St. Joe's got past Kewaunee 3-2 in Division III. And Division IV won by Johnson Creek with a 5-0 shutout over Pinelli. NBA Finals Game 7 in Oklahoma City coming up Sunday night. The Pacers dominated the Thunder last night 108-91. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Happy first day of summer. Under mixed skies today, high temperatures will rise to about 80 degrees. Got a chance for a shower or thunderstorm overnight tonight, and then the heat surges in and the humidity cranks up, prompting a heat advisory as temps spike to the 90s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. It's 80 degrees at our studios.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the university system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station, and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Civic Media News Director Charlie Pittman joins us to cover all the weekend news. And then we're talking ticks in hour number two with entomologist PJ Leash, the bug guy. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Matinair on air.
Pre-recorded content.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people. This is the Maggie Dawn Show.
It is this moment right now, and we need people that have wealth and access to step the hell up.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
We can't take this as a country to have a leader who is so ill-informed and we look terrible.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
You got a bad sandwich at your favorite deli. What do you do about it? We can talk about whatever you want to sound off on.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Friday to you. We made it. Yet another week in the books. I am relieved to be here. I hope you are as well. We got a great program lined up for you this afternoon, filled with some good things, some hopefully lighter things, but also some legal things, as it were. I'm going to be joined by Jim Santel. He's with me. And it is Free Ticket Friday, having concluded our big two-week giveaway last week. We are now back to giving away some Brewers tickets at the Civic Media Club level. We're going to do that this hour. I'm going to be dropping that word to win very shortly. But before we get to that, a big hearty thank you and welcome to Jim Santel. Glad to have you back.
Maggie, always a delight, always an honor to be with you to talk about legal stuff as we do. And again, lots of paper on your desk and in mine. Calvin's too. Lots and lots of things happening.
Well, glad to have you here. Let's jump in. The big news this week in Wisconsin legal news was what I can call the multi-year saga, apparently, of the infamous lame duck legislation. Looks like it's going to finally conclude in some way, shape, or form. The attorney general's lawsuit, which he initially tried to file directly in the Wisconsin State Supreme Court, was sent back down to the trial court, finally moved up through all of the courts, trial and appeals court. And this week, the Wisconsin Supreme Court unanimously sided with the attorney general. Jim, fill in some of the details about the case, what was at issue, and your thoughts about what I was surprised to see as a unanimous decision from the court.
Absolutely. It's a big deal, written by Justice Brian Hagedorn on behalf of all of his associate justices and the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. This goes to the fundamentals of how government works, right, Maggie? You and I both know that when it comes to civil litigation, we're not talking criminal cases here, civil litigation, whether you're a corp counsel, I'm the United States attorney, you have many cases in which you have to negotiate, you have to settle them. You can try them as well, but to settle them, you need the authority and the responsibility to do it. What? Based upon not only your expertise, but your involvement in the case, you know all the facts. It is ridiculous. And it was from the time that this was first proposed way back in December of 2018. Ridiculous to assume that somehow in this system that has worked, not perfectly, but worked for many, many years, that we would now involve the legislature in coming to the table to decide on whether or not the settlement of cases in the civil arena makes sense or not. Here's my reference point, Maggie, you know it well. Just last week, the United States Supreme Court issued a case under the Federal Tort Claims Act. It's that federal law that basically says that, yes, indeed, there are circumstances under which you can sue the federal government. These particular family members had the horrific experience of having been the victims of a botched raid. It was horrific. And the Supreme Court said, yes, you can sue on that. You can go back and advocate for your claims back in the court. So it's a good result. But it's a good example also of the kind of particularized thing that you worked on, municipal attorneys worked on, federal attorneys worked on routinely when it comes to resolving cases. And it hasn't been resolved yet, that one, but it underscores the nature of the claims that are made. The notion from the start, which is what this was all about, that the legislature once again would come inside these negotiations, these discussions between the government on one hand and private parties on the other, and address the facts, the equities, the particular balancing of harms and interests, and also money damages, is not only legally completely absurd, but also practically absurd. Can you imagine, and this is where I'll stop for the moment anyway, can you imagine if every time in the United States, in Milwaukee County, in any city in the state of Wisconsin, before an executive branch person, a lawyer, representing the people of the county, of the jurisdiction, had to go over to the legislature and get their involvement in this and get their imprimatur on it, it would not only slow things down cataclysmically, but also arguably produce results that are not based upon justice and fairness. This is where this comes from. It was absurd from the beginning. Thankfully, and it's a representation of the fact that this was so absurd, you've got a unanimous Supreme Court, all of them, regardless of what you think about their partisan views, all of them look at this and said, no, litigation cannot work this way, and we need to get Wisconsin back on track. Knock it off, legislature, you're done. The attorney general can indeed settle cases, period.
One of the things, and folks, again, I'm going to be giving that Friday word to win for Free Ticket Friday shortly here. So hang on, keep on the horn, as they say. One of the things that I wanted to get into a wee bit, because different local jurisdictions actually do require settlement approval. For example, the city of Milwaukee has to bring that city attorney's office has to bring cases that they are settling to that common council, and it gets discussed. Here's part of what I think is really difficult. Legislators are not experts in these cases, though they certainly can be briefed, and certainly a legislator can come to a good faith and reasoned judgment about whether a particular case should be settled and under what parameters. That said, there are two things that, maybe three things operationally that I think are really difficult. One is, if this was the case across the board and all levels of jurisdictions, what you would see is the functioning of government more or less grind to a halt. People sue government entities all the time, and there is an incredible amount of judgments and professional analysis that is required. If every single case in every single level of government required the legislature to act, it would simply stymie the functioning of government. There's too many lawsuits at too many levels at too high a volume to make that practicable. Secondly, there is a lot of very important judgments that are made, and an attorney would be placed in a position of having to disclose trial strategy and risk assessments of the cases to a large or even smaller subset of legislators who have incentives of their own, political, cyclical, election-based incentives, potentially, and are certainly entitled as a client of that lawyer to disclose confidential information. Again, because the lawyer doesn't stand in the shoes that an individual personal attorney for each individual legislator would, there's a very real question about how is the entity, the governmental unit, and by extension, the residents and taxpayers thereof, best served? And if you can imagine that there may be instances where an entity's best interest might not be exactly in lockstep with an individual elected official's short-term political interest. And that could lead to disclosure of information if you had a bad faith acting or a good faith political actor who just assessed their own personal political desires as subsuming or being more important than the entity's legal risk management desires. Gee, I can't imagine an individual elected official who would fit that bill, Jim. There's a problem there. So there's the practical volume problem. There's the confidentiality problem. And then there is this, which is the thing to me that has always is omnipresent. If you have a legislature that gets involved with the functioning of the executive branch at a highly detailed level, in other words, going beyond oversight and into dictating operations and expert decision-making in the executive branch. That is this. Aside from the political potential conflict of interest, there is the potential that an individual elected official could be lobbied by parties to that lawsuit. And I don't mean, hey, I'll give you a huge chunk of money for your campaign, but it could include that. I just mean prevailing upon that elected official's perhaps very good intentions and desire to do a good thing. And of course, if you're a party to a lawsuit, you're going to believe in your side of the lawsuit, right? And you're going to tell your elected official this, right? And sometimes that doesn't present a fair picture of what's happening. Also, again, just the specter of political donations by people that have litigation interests in front, you're inserting the potential for corruption. And that is why there, in a lot of ways, the manner in which for the local jurisdictions that do require legislative approval of settlements, there are mechanisms to forestall that. There are very clear ethical rules. One of the things that even when I was briefing elected officials on cases that they didn't have a say over when I was corp counsel, I would actually point these things out and say, hey, to be a savvy elected official, you need to be aware that you may get impleted upon in this way, entreated to intervene in these things. Resist that attempt because, boy, you end up on a slippery slope. Then people know you're, quote, open for business, and you will start getting entreaties from all manner of people that have business before and with that legislative body. So those impracticality, the issue of confidentiality, and then, of course, the conflict of interest, the opportunity for influence peddling, all are things that mediate not in favor against having legislatures involved in every single settlement decision that a government entity may have to make.
And Maggie, at the large level, at the small level, the big one also, implicit in everything you've just said so accurately, is just this. To those people out there who are fans of the Constitution, we all should be, this is a constitutional issue, and Hagedorn writes about it. He says, you know what? We delegate different things to different branches of government. There's nothing wrong with saying, you do this, we do that. You don't have the executive legislating. You don't have the Congress. You don't have the legislature deciding cases, all kinds of things. So that's number one. At the lower level, the other part of this is if you happen to be a litigant in one of these civil cases before with the state involved, you are waiting around indefinitely for your case to be resolved. That too falls in your bucket of very practical things that should not happen here. It will not only bring the process to a halt, but those people who may have legitimate claims want to settle them, want to get on with their lives. And those two people are also constituents, right? They're citizens. They're residents of our communities. And they too will be stopped from getting the justice they want. There is nothing good to say about this process. Thank goodness our Wisconsin Supreme Court looked at this and said, cannot do, no can do, and it won't happen here in the state of Wisconsin. Good result.
And a relief to all of us, we had one that was unanimous. Who knew? Right. Which speaks to the clarity of this question. It's only taken us years and years to sort through it. Now, folks, I promise you that word of the day for Free Ticket Friday. You're going to want to text this in to win 4 tickets on the club level for a Brewers game coming up soon. That word to win this afternoon is pitch. You want to see the first pitch, P-I-T-C-H. Text that in via the app. It's Friday, June 27th versus the Colorado Rockies. Again, the word is pitch, P-I-T-C-H. Text that in via the Civic Media app. Hopefully you win these tickets, and Jim and I will be back on the other side with more after the messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Mino and the Mayor.
Come see why Green Thumb Alternatives in Oshkosh is where the grass is always greener. At 600 Ohio Street, you can smell before you buy and chat with a staff that actually knows their stuff and cares. Locally owned, with locally grown products, they've got everything from flowers and edibles to bath products, pet treats, and even snacks for the munchies. The quality, next level. The service, personal. The vibes, always welcoming. Call 920-385-0686 or hit greenthumbalt.com.
Insight Eye Care has been serving the Fox Valley for over 30 years and are proud sponsors of Mino and the Mayor's Eye on the Community. Insight offers comprehensive eye care, including glasses and contact lenses. Their doctors have a special interest in treating chronic eye disease, specialty contact lenses, and pediatric care. Find Insight on Sawyer Street in Oshkosh and Chain Drive in Appleton. Visit WIinsight.com to schedule your eye exam. Improving lives by improving sight. Insight Eye Care.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. For the last few months, Governor Tony Evers has said repeatedly that he would make a decision about whether or not to run for a third term after the state budget process is completed. In a recent opinion column at the Recombobulation Area, I made the argument that the decision that Evers should make should be to not seek a third term as Wisconsin's governor. This argument is not one of ideological differences or policy disagreements. Tony Evers has been a good governor and has served the state well. This more has to do with Evers' age. He'll be 75 years old in November 2026, and about how the Democratic Party has had a massive, inescapable problem in its unwillingness to pass the torch to the next generation. Tony Evers needs to do what so many other Democrats have struggled so mightily to do and step aside when the time is right. And after Joe Biden's catastrophic 2024, this is a conversation we need to be having, and we need to be having it now. Democrats can't keep repeating the same mistakes over and over. It's time to do things differently.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
I was stuck in a state of panic and endless rituals, so I made the call.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org, a message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I got a fine guest kicking off this Friday afternoon with me. He joins me frequently on Tuesdays and Fridays. His name is Jim Santel. He's the former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin and current fabulous host of Amicus, a law review, a fine program you can find Saturdays from 9 to 11 across the network. Jim also is a goodly baseball fan, and it is Free Ticket Friday across the Civic Media Network. There is a word to win this Friday, today, for tickets to see the Brewers at AmFam Field on Friday, June 27th. So this is next Friday versus the Colorado Rockies, a 7:10 start time. You want to text this word in via the Civic Media app, which you can get for free wherever you find your apps. And the word to win this Free Ticket Friday is pitch, P-I-T-C-H. That is in I like to get there in time for the first pitch with my scorecard and pencil. Speaking of scorecards, Jim, it has been an interesting week plus for the Trump administration with respect to its deployment of both National Guard and active duty Marines to Los Angeles in response to widespread protests against mass deportation raids. The key here, and I think one of the things that has really activated people, is not the idea that we are going to deport dangerous criminals. Everybody that I know is like, yeah, you commit a dangerous crime and you're convicted, we're going to deport you. Like that, let's do that. Democrats agree with that.
Yes, yes.
That's not what's happening. The Trump administration is sending scads of masked military clad, military equipment clad ICE agents, FBI agents, and other federal agency law enforcement into workplaces, into daycares, into schools, and they are round at the Home Depots in the morning, and they are rounding people up. And Americans, doesn't matter what political persuasion, do not support deporting people who are working. They do not support deporting people, though, here without legal status, people who have lived here for 30 years or more. They do not support deporting children whose parents brought them here. There's a whole gamut. They don't support deporting people who do not have legal status, whom are married to American citizens. There's been polling in the last 2 weeks demonstrating that. And yet we see folks that signed up to serve their country against foreign adversaries, and in the case of the National Guard, of course, to respond to natural disasters here at home, having to face off against their neighbors, friends, and coworkers and family on the streets. I think it's a pretty meaningful yet simple op-ed came out this week, authored by two former governors, Kathleen Sebelius, a Democrat, former governor of Kansas. She served from 2003 to 2009, as well as Mark Rassico, a Republican, longtime governor of Montana, very red state. He served Montana from 93 to 2001. They penned this op-ed that basically said, every state, regardless of your red or blue status today, should be deeply concerned and troubled by this illegal deployment of the National Guard. What did you make of the op-ed, Jim? I thought it was wonderfully straightforward, short and plain statement.
Yes, right. And for that reason, wildly, wildly accessible too. You can pick this up. You can read this, Maggie, in just a few moments. And they've got it just right. Talk about, again, what are the roles of a president? What are the roles of a governor? And both of them basically say that what Donald Trump has done, to quote from the opinion, they have threatened our cherished constitutional principles of state sovereignty, freedom of speech. As to that first concept, that's the whole idea. It is governors who have the authority to basically summon in the National Guard when, in fact, there is a crisis of a major dimension. And it is not the president. It is not the president. And when you do that, you are not only undermining, again, the state and federalism system that we talk about so much, but you're also, to your first point about what's going on here, you're doing something that doesn't make sense practically. You're bringing people into a situation where they're not needed. And that's exactly what the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, and the mayor of Los Angeles have said. We don't need this. We're okay. We can do this just fine. The opinion itself, the item authored by these two governors, makes that very clear. And it's also reflective of what the judge did, this Judge yes. Breyer, in this wonderful, again, it's longer, it's not quite as accessible, but right. it's 36 pages. But he also goes on to say that in order for the president to do this, aside from the federalism problems, which are huge, the constitutional problems, which is what the governors talk about, he also says, you know, in order to do this, you got to be able to find a danger of invasion, you've got to find a rebellion, and that the president's unable to do anything else other than to do this. And in this wonderful order, he mirrors exactly what the governor is saying, and concludes, there is no rebellion. This is not an insurrection. And oh, by the way, we don't need to do this under these circumstances. It's very compelling reading. And if you need to read one of the two of them, I recommend this opinion piece. It is wonderful. It's perfect. It tells you everything you need to know.
We'll include the links, of course, to both the op-ed by the governors that you can also find at newsweek.com, as well as a link to Judge Breyer's decision. Now that case is with the Ninth Circuit, they're considering the merits. We're going to be watching this space as it goes, as this moves forward. We're going to be talking when we return on the other side. We're going to talk a little bit more about a couple of key concepts from the op-ed, as well as a couple of our favorite lines from Judge Breyer's opinion, of which there are many. And we might even get to talk about what happens when somebody who is patently and completely partisan and totally unqualified as a legal scholar is appointed to and recommended for confirmation to a federal appeals court. That description, when we return, you're not going to want to go anywhere. The Legal Eagles discussion this Friday afternoon continues as we dive deep on the current status of law under the Trump administration. I'm Maggie Dawn. That's Jim Santel. The word to win on this free ticket Friday is pitch, P-I-T-C-H, for four tickets. Next Friday's game.
Tom Hartman here. You're listening to WISS.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For 98.3 and 96.5 WISS News, I'm Lisa Hale. The verdict is in a case where a family sued Ascension St. Elizabeth Hospital in Appleton in a civil wrongful death lawsuit. The trial started June 2nd. Closing arguments were given Thursday afternoon, and the verdict, siding with the hospital, came in just a few hours later. Grace Shara, who had Down syndrome, was hospitalized in 2021 with COVID-19. She died in the hospital. The family has maintained her rights were violated when they listed Grace as do not resuscitate without the family's okay. Governor Tony Evers urges Republican lawmakers to approve investments in broadband. Joanne Krulets has more.
The Democratic governor requested $400 million in his executive budget for the Broadband Expansion Grant Program to provide or improve broadband internet in underserved areas. The governor's request comes as the Trump administration has made sweeping changes to the federal broadband equity access and deployment program. Evers' office says that will further delay bringing affordable, high-speed internet to more Wisconsin homes and businesses. The Public Service Commission of Wisconsin estimates that 39% of Wisconsinites lack access to affordable internet.
The Wisconsin State Patrol is advising Fond du Lac County residents that it will conduct aerial enforcement on Interstate 41 Sunday. During aerial enforcement, law enforcement authorities will monitor the chosen highways from the air and report traffic violations like speeding or aggressive driving to patrol cars on the ground. Wisconsin State Patrol officials say they announce aerial enforcement activities ahead of time so residents are more likely to voluntarily comply with traffic laws. I'm Lisa Hale for 98.3 and 96.5 WISS News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. No superhero movie will go into production without a finished script. Sounds like a no-brainer, but it had to be said. That is a declaration in the DC Universe by CEO James Gunn. Gunn says the movie industry is dying due to this very practice. Gunn, who's also made movies at Marvel Cinemas, says they are guilty of it too. The Guardians of the Galaxy trilogy director-producer says it's not that people don't want to see movies, it's just that studios make unfinished scripts. Everything starts with the script. Well, NBC tried to make a case for a Night Court reboot, and it was an okay idea for three seasons, but will not see a fourth. The original Night Court ran for nine seasons in the 80s and starred Harry Anderson. Melissa Rauch took over behind the bench for the new iteration and said recently producers shopped the reboot to other networks after NBC canceled it in May. According to Variety, the show premiered in 2023 to excellent ratings and was almost immediately renewed, but the ratings dropped off fast and hard. Tough biz. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Happy first day of summer. Under mixed skies today, high temperatures will rise to about 80 degrees. Got a chance for a shower or thunderstorm overnight tonight, and then the heat surges in and the humidity cranks up, prompting a heat advisory as temps spike to the 90s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, currently 82 degrees.
Mino and the Mayor.
Show him the picture he showed me today in the striped little short shorts.
No, it was the
they
belly.
They would be banned
I
now.
Know. No, John.
Too much skin.
Hubba, hubba, hubba.
Man, dig that crazy shit.
Oh, man, short shorts.
Oh, that's funny. Wow.
Mino and the Mayor, weekday morning, 6 till 9.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Todd Michaels joins us now.
I have to give a shout out to Oshkosh. It's a very underrated city.
There was also a restaurant there I really liked. I don't think it's there anymore.
Yeah, Vitaly's was great. I may have gone to like a prom dinner there or something like that back in my day too, Pete.
A little calzone before you tear it up in the dance floor.
Man, there's nothing better than wearing a tuxedo and a little calzone in your cummerbund.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Quinn Hurley to discuss the Green Bay Tattoo Festival. Chris Ruckdoshel joins me to talk about Muskie Fest in Hayward, and Terry Barr is back from vacation for Bar Band Friday. Let's light it up.
Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us, and happy Friday afternoon. Speaking of being happy, I'm happiest if I'm sitting at a baseball game, quaffing a beer, and talking with my buddies. I bet you are too. And if that's the case, it is Free Ticket Friday here across the Civic Media Radio Network. And boy, do we have you covered. You are going to text a word to win via the Civic Media app. I'm about to give you that word, and that will qualify you to win 4 tickets to the Brewers versus the Colorado Rockies next Friday. That's next Friday, June 27th at 7:10 p.m. What fun. What fun that will be if you win. And I certainly hope you do. That word to win that you're going to want to text in before we hit the 5 o'clock hour is pitch, P-I-T-C-H. That is P-I-T-C-H. You want to get there for the first pitch. But I've got Jim Santel with me right now. He is good at catching a pitch, especially if it's about the law. You can hear him every Saturday morning from 9 to 11. He's host of Amicus, a law review. Thanks for hanging in there with us, Jim, this Friday afternoon.
Of course, Maggie.
So we've been talking about this op-ed written by Governors Sebelius and Rasico, a Dem and a Republican, one from Kansas, one from Montana, that was pretty plain in its criticism of Donald Trump's decision. Currently under litigation, which has already had at least one federal Article 3 judge decide that what he did was unconstitutional and a violation of other federal laws, criticizing his deployment of the National Guard as well as active duty Marines to LA. As we were discussing, one of the things that I'd like to point out is if you think that the LA mayor or police chief or LA county sheriff and or the governor were slow to respond to isolated incidents of lawlessness, that's fine. You can criticize them, but they are the duly elected leaders of these various governmental jurisdictions within California. And you don't get to just, oh, well, I'll ignore the fact that these leaders exercise their discretion in this way. And I will simply step in as the president and take control of this situation. That is not respect for local control or states' rights. In fact, it flies in the face of that. Here's a couple of items that I wanted to highlight that the governors wrote. As elected governors, we were sworn in as commanders in chief of our state National Guard units. Their service to our nation is essential. They did not sign up to serve and be away from their families in order to police their own neighborhoods. When a president oversteps a governor to federalize the National Guard, it erodes the very concept of federalism, the heart of our system of government. When a president tramples on one state's sovereignty, the effect extends far beyond that one state. When any state can become a target, the whole country remains at risk. I was very thankful that they said that as plainly as they did. And that is because I think there is this grave misapprehension by a lot of Trump supporters. One, basically based on the good faith of Democrats that, they won't assume we'd never do this similar lawlessness, or that eventually they won't be the subject of Trump's ire or have their rights trampled. And what the governors, a Republican and a Democrat, point out is that is simply not an appropriate assumption to make, and it is a dangerous one. Your reaction.
It absolutely is. And we can all think of various cities, municipalities in so-called red states that happen to be blue. We think about cities in blue states that happen to be red. Those things are across the country. They're not very common, but we do see them. And that's the problem. Once you have gone down this road, you've opened up this box and you have said under the slimmest of predicates, we can have the National Guard be federalized and we're going to basically take over local law enforcement and do from Washington what we think the local elected representatives are not doing. That can happen then in your backyard too. It's not just California. It's not just Chicago. It's not just those places that may be affiliated with a more liberal population. It is across the board. And to the extent that people are concerned about concepts generally, let's get back to what you just said, Maggie, states' rights. How often do we hear that? States' rights, states have got to have the authority to act. This is that. And so You can't have it in one area and not in another area. You've got to be able to ensure that states, as James Madison contemplated, everybody who wrote the Constitution contemplated, states do still have a major role to play. It is called federalism, and you can't pick and choose where you want to apply states' rights. Yes, it's a subject of a lot of litigation from time to time. Where do those lines get crossed? Sometimes it's called like marbleized cake, right? Yes. But the reality is that if you're concerned about the president being told by a federal judge he can't do this, again, think about the consequences of it in your own neighborhood. And think also about the ways in which our nation was founded. This is an excellent exposition of just that.
So again, you'll find that op-ed and Judge Breyer's opinion deeming these actions by the Trump administration unconstitutional and otherwise unlawful under other federal laws. What this symbolizes to me, Jim, and we've seen this again and again and again, as Trump's loss count across distinct cases now is nearing the hallmark 200 mark, which is crazy to think of, is that many have noted that the courts, while slow and while lacking their own law enforcement or military to enforce their orders, have actually proven to be a somewhat steady bulwark against the Trump administration's lawlessness. However, there is increasing nervousness amongst the most conservative legal scholars that Donald Trump is now seeking to stack the federal judiciary, not with good conservative lawyers that will be good conservative judges and potentially justices, but with people who have very little fidelity to the rule of law, but whose only redeeming characteristic is their personal fealty, their personal loyalty to Donald Trump. Conservatives now pointing to the appointment of Emil Bove, whose confirmation hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee was just scheduled this week for June 25th at 10 a.m. Central. Emil Bove, as a perfect exemplar of not promoting someone, not nominating someone to the federal judiciary based on merit, in fact, nominating them because they might actually be kind of a crappy lawyer and legal thinker, but boy, they'll do exactly what Donald Trump wants. And I wanted to get some thoughts from you and about Mr. Bove. In a snapshot, folks, you could spend hours talking about the things that Mr. Bove has done and said, but in a snapshot, he is one of Donald Trump's personal criminal defense lawyers. In his very brief tenure in the Department of Justice, he was, again, first as an acting deputy attorney general and then as a top aide to Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche. He was basically known as being a bully and an intimidator and specifically agitated against longtime frontline prosecutors in the Southern District of New York, forcing them to resign related to Donald Trump's, I'm going to call it extortion of Mayor Eric Adams in New York to get Adams to, quote, cooperate with his immigration raids and mass deportations. Your reactions to Mr. Bove's appointment particularly the reactions of those that are conservative lawyers.
Yes.
Namely the Federalist Society. It's kind of now this very poorly hidden secret that there is warfare within the MAGA movement over this.
Absolutely. And again, we can't overlook the first point that you made, which is this is someone who sat at the right side of Donald Trump during those weeks when he was appearing in front of Judge Merchan. On the left side was Todd Blanche. Where are those folks now? Todd Blanche, the Deputy Attorney General of the United States of America, Emile Beauvais, in this period, right after the inauguration, Emile Beauvais was basically in charge of the Department of Justice. He was called the Principal Associate Deputy Attorney General. The PADAG is the yep. is the acronym for it. And in that role, again, not yet confirmed by the Senate and other things going on inside the department, when you are going in, and this is the person who, again, initially began to recraft very much at Donald Trump's encouragement, and even those who are coming into those positions, like the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, changing all sorts of policies, not to the good for anyone, Republicans and Democrats, major changes, and the indication, the illustration that you made of the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, who said, no, I'm not going to do this, Mr. Beauvais. I am not going to dismiss a legitimate and appropriate prosecution of whom? Of the mayor of New York. And even though you may have be taking your orders from the White House, I am not going to do that. She resigned and made a statement there about who he was and what he is doing. All of those kinds of things desperately need to be the focus of the Senate Judiciary Committee for hours and hours, asking him not only about his recent history, the connections, how close they are to the president. You don't want somebody inside the Department of Justice taking cues from the White House, but even worse, you don't want somebody from on a court of appeals taking calls and taking direction from anybody near the Oval Office. The senators reviewing this have got to be focused on those questions and asking him, frankly, hypotheticals about what he may do if indeed, as a sitting appeals court judge, the phone rings and your assistant says, this is the president. What do you do? What do you do, Mr. Beauvais? That's an important question for them to ask.
So in addition to basically forcing out, bullying out, intimidating out long time, also conservative lawyers in the Southern District of New York related to the Eric Adams case, he also was responsible for basically firing all of the federal prosecutors, including conservative Republicans, who had anything to do with the prosecutions of the January 6th rioters who beat and attacked cops. He was the guy that executed the Trump order to fire all of those people. And what's interesting is that there is this National Review piece written by Ed Whelan. Now, Ed Whelan is a Federalist. He is a Republican. He's the Republican that Republicans call when they need a conservative lawyer. And basically, Ed Whelan calls Beauvais utterly and completely unfit. He calls him and references folks calling him a savage, and that he is so awful and a bully. But like many bullies, again, this is Whelan saying, he has absolutely no ability to take what he dishes out so readily to others, which is absolutely incredible. Apparently, during a corruption investigation into Mayor Bill de Blasio, never charged, former New York City mayor, some of Emile Beauvais' superiors saying that he may have, through some of his actions, compromised that investigation. And apparently, Beauvais lost his bananas in this internal meeting. Big thanks to you, Jim Santel, host of Amicus Law Review, Saturdays from 9 to 11 across the network. And folks, don't go anywhere. Get your word to win in. Pitch via the Civic Media app to win some free Ticket Friday Brewers tickets versus the Colorado Rockies. And don't go anywhere because we've got Terry Barr coming up next with what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Olson Legal Group is a local veteran-owned company with offices in Oshkosh and Berlin. It's always the right time to make an estate plan, and Olson Legal Group covers all your bases. From wills, trust, and non-probate transfers to powers of attorney for financial and health care, Olson Legal Group will ensure your wishes are honored and your loved ones are cared for. Plan today for peace of mind tomorrow. Call Olson Legal Group today at 920-230-7020 or olsonlegalgroup.com.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like metro life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away, so come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Voting Rights Lab reports there were 59 state bills introduced on proof of citizenship for voter registration this year, and 160 bills concerning voter ID. A handful have made it near the finish line, but not all have passed. Since President Donald Trump's baseless accusations of mail-in voting fraud in 2020 and his unfounded claims of widespread non-citizen voting in the 2024 election, Republican-dominated legislatures have raced to pass stricter voter ID and proof of citizenship laws, despite no widespread abuse of either. In New Hampshire, versions of SB 218 were advanced, requiring submission of ID and proof of citizenship for absentee registration, and are now in a committee of conference. In Texas, a high-priority documentary proof of citizenship bill died without action at the end of the session. In Texas alone, there were 15 bills introduced to provide documentary proof of citizenship and 10 tightening voter ID laws. Nevada Governor Joe Lombardo surprisingly vetoed a bipartisan voter ID bill attempting to codify a widely supported ballot initiative. Democrats negotiated expanded ballot drop boxes in exchange for supporting voter ID. His veto statement said the bill did not address implementing voter ID for mail-in ballots. Wyoming and Indiana passed proof of citizenship earlier this year. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
There's no better place to catch Brewers baseball than right here. Every pitch, every hit, every home run.
And a fly ball to right center. Malloy is back, and this one is gone again for Hoskins.
Brewers baseball on WISS is brought to you by Addison Jones Realty, Zeroni's Macaroni Pizza Pub, Green Thumb Organics, and Berkshire Hathaway Water City Realty. Catch Brewers baseball all season long on WISS. Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's time for legitimately my favorite segment of the entire week. What's good, local and overlooked here in Wisconsin with my good friend Terry Barr. Welcome back to the show, Terry. We missed you.
Oh, I'm so glad to be missed. It's a good thing to be missed, isn't it?
It's better than the alternative, you know?
Absolutely. Thank you, Maggie, for that. Oh, of my course. Goodness. Happy to be back with you. I know that a lot has been going on, so I'm happy to jump into something on the little lighter side for you today.
Indeed. Long week. They're all long weeks, and that's why we so very much look forward to you. And I know all of our listeners also have been looking forward to Free Ticket Fridays here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Free Ticket Fridays, if you're new to the show, new to the network, this is where every Friday we drop a word of the hour that you can text in via the Civic Media app. Don't do it the old-fashioned way. Got to go get the app. You text in that word, and you will be registered to win 4 club-level Brewers tickets to the beautiful and amazing American Family Field here in Milwaukee. Today, in this very hour, we're giving away tickets for the game next Friday, June 27th, against the Colorado Rockies. First pitch being thrown at 7:10 p.m. And the word to win this Friday, text it in now, my friends, is pitch. You want to get there for the first pitch, P-I-T-C-H. The word is pitch. Full contesting rules, of course, available at civicmedia.us. And now with that fun business concluded, Terry, what you got for us this fine Friday afternoon?
I have this for you. Did you know there is a shrine, and I'm not kidding, it's called a shrine to all things dairy, and it is a national shrine. It's called the National Dairy Shrine, and it just happens to be in Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin. I was pretty sure to find this. Incredible. It started in 1949. Oh. 20,000 people are now members of the National Dairy Shrine. And I recently had a chance to talk with the executive director. His name is Mike Upperman. And he had so much to say because, of course, it's June Dairy Month. Yes. But here's a little bit about how he explains what the shrine is all about.
There's three pillars to our mission. The first is to inspire youth. So every year we give out scholarships to college students. We'll give out about 40 scholarships, just under $50,000 to college students who want to pursue a career in the dairy industry. And our second pillar is all about recognizing dairy leaders. So each year we recognize pioneers who have made significant contributions to the dairy industry. And our third pillar, which is heavily involved in Wisconsin, is we have a museum. Our third pillar is preserving the history of the dairy industry. Our museum is in Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin, and it started in 1981. It really serves two different communities. As you might imagine, most of the people that come through the museum are unaware of the dairy industry. So they learn about how milk is made, you know, how cows are cared for, where their cheese and ice cream and cottage cheese and everything comes from. But then it's also for those dairy farmers who want to come through and just see how dairy cows were managed 50 years ago. You know, so yeah, there's a lot of artifacts. There's a lot of history in the museum.
So the shrine itself started in 1949, but the organizers of the shrine realized people don't know enough about the dairy industry, thus the museum, which started in 82. Now, the museum, amazing, Maggie. They have some of the things that you stand and look at in awe and think, how did this work? They have one of the first butter churns where they would attach a dog to a little track and activate the butter churn.
I am now having visions of Finney churning butter for my consumption pleasure. My little dog, she loves herself a good run. She'd be a good butter churner, and she's so little too.
Awesome. Oh, she's kind of little for that though, isn't she? Yeah.
Oh, I, you know, not commercial volume of butter, but me, you know, maybe just a little. Did you ever do that when you were like in grade school growing up? I always wondered, was this a uniquely Wisconsin thing? We literally made butter in grade school by shaking cream. Now, that is a good gosh darn way to keep kids pretty occupied and tired out for the afternoon. I loved the churning of the butter.
Well, and it's so great because that's like one of the old things they have, but so much more too. Old milking equipment. Yes. And again, it's things you look at and go, huh, how did that actually work at one time? But we know it did because dairy farming has been around forever.
We it's are America's really Dairyland. Yeah. Things that make you go, about really old timey dairy production. Okay, Terry, I've got a question for you.
Oh, no.
Swiss or cheddar?
Oh, I think if I'm in a pinch, I really have to go with cheddar.
So I am a Swiss miss. I have to say I grew like all the Sammies growing up. My sandwiches were big on the Swiss. My mom is a big Swiss fan. In fact, my go-to snack, this will tell you how Wisconsin I am, is basically like a piece of salami and a piece of Swiss cheese. Like roll that up. When you have no time for anything else, I can always get a piece of salami and a piece of Swiss cheese Delicious. Now, is cheddar your favorite cheese, or do you have another that tops your list?
It is, but when they sometimes will offer you a sandwich with multiple choices, sometimes I'll ask, can I have all the cheese,
Terry is a D, all of the above. I will take all of the cheeses. I think that is a wise, wise approach. It is June. It is Dairy Month. She is Terry Barr, my colleague here at Civic Media. She's here with us every Friday afternoon to bring you what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. Thanks so much, Terry. Have a fabulous weekend.
You as well, Maggie. See you later, everybody.
Take care, y'all. We'll be back after the top of the hour break, after these brief messages right here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked, everybody. We'll be back with more fun on the other side.
This is WISS Berlin Oshkosh and WZBU New Holstein Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Stephanie Officer. Minnesota's Brooklyn Park police were seen searching the Edinburgh golf course for evidence on Friday in connection with the shooting death of Minnesota State Representative Melissa Hortman and her husband, Mark. Their home is next to the course. Golfers John Markgraf, Mark Ashton, and Tom Prosser were playing around when police were on the course. They tell KTSB the case is heartbreaking.
Oh, sadness.
I just feel
a tragedy.
Yeah,
it's total disbelief.
I'm horrified that they can actually try to, it might intimidate a lot of other people to not follow their heart and mind and have to follow someone else's rules.
Well, not everyone is dreading the extreme heat this weekend. This man in New Jersey's Asbury Park says he waited months to finally get to this weather.
I've been going in the water anyway, and I, you know, love summer, and I'm patient enough to have it come along. And I appreciate the days when it's not like perfect, because it's a little quieter for the locals, you know.
This is ABC News.